Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Brian Finney, author of the new novel, Dangerous Conjectures. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Nice to be with you.
Great. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Dangerous Conjectures, how would you describe the novel?
Well, it's a novel that's set in the first 3 months of 2020, when, if you remember, the virus was spreading, and by the time you reach the end of the novel, all the schools and offices have closed down that day. It's also located in the Bay Area, in Oakland, to be specific. It focuses on a couple in their 40s, Adam, who is a professor of computer science at UC Berkeley, and Julia, who his wife, who is a research assistant at the ACLU branch in San Francisco. And they have a 12-year-old daughter. Basically speaking, Adam's graduate class is asked by the Secret Service to investigate a leak that embarrassed the government. And when they go into it and get very close to discovering who it was who actually was responsible for it, the government agents return and say, drop it. And that arouses his suspicion. And he starts investigating a new conspiracy theory, QAnon, and discovers that it has a local branch in the area, which, of course, QAnon isn't entirely, internet phenomenon. Being a computer scientist, he cannot understand how so many Americans, as well as other people worldwide, can subscribe to such an absurd theory. Because, as you know, at that time, QAnon wasn't known, even among my friends. But now everybody knows about QAnon, which subscribes to the idea that there is a sort of cabal, a demonic cabal of pedophiles, mainly Democrats, who are intent upon undermining the government in power through what's called the secret state, which is, so to speak, powerful officials within the government who operate independently of it. At any rate, while he's doing this, his wife, Julia, is becoming increasingly frightened by the spread of the virus, which she takes more seriously than he does, even though he's the scientist, and which causes her to make some very, questionable decisions, the least of which is simply subscribing to some of the current conspiracy theories, not QAnon, that were spreading at the time about the virus. But more dangerously, she tries to get rid of an ex who suddenly reappears in her life by sleeping with him once. And instead of doing that, of course, it has the very reverse, and he becomes obsessed with her and stalks her, stalks the family. And the violence that he represents to this couple and to their daughter is, if you like, a miniature reflection of what is happening nationwide in the primaries, where the White House and QAnon are, between them, stirring up violent confrontations outside the polling booths in an effort to undermine the elections and to ensure the continuity of the existing presidency. So that, roughly speaking, is the scenario.
Sure. And I'm curious, do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing Dangerous Conjectures?
This wasn't the only idea, but one of the ideas that impelled me into it was that I, too, as you know, am a professor emeritus, although in literature and not in computer science. But I, too, like most professors, believe in the superiority of reasoning and fact-finding to conspiracy theories. And I too, like Adam, couldn't understand why this ridiculous, absurd conspiracy theory was catching on like wildfire. And one of the things that Adam has to learn in the course of the book is that reason will always take second place to emotion if the two come into conflict with one another. And that there were so many Americans whose lives were such a disaster, who were on the point of, you know, running out of money and running out of food, being declared homeless. And here was this theory that invited them to join the winning side, and that, you know, just round the corner was waiting, you know, the Elysium that they all desired, but were not experiencing in their lives.
Interesting. And I'm curious, hang on just one second. I'm having a computer issue. I can edit it out. Sorry about that. Well, I know that you write about conspiracy theories in the novel Dangerous Conjectures, and I'm sure that you've thought about this during the writing of the novel and the thinking about the novel. What is the appeal of conspiracy theories to so many Americans?
Well, you know, this is what I'm saying, is that so many Americans, you know, their lives have deteriorated, and that, you know, instead of seeing their children as, you know, being offered an even better standard of living than themselves, they see the thing going in the reverse direction. They also, many of them, experience extreme, or shall I say, monetary concerns. You know, they live from paycheck to paycheck. They have difficulty putting food on the table. They're threatened with being kicked out of their rental. And, you know, their lives are so unsatisfactory that here is this alternative world, if you like, that is offered to them, where everything is black and white, and where they are invited to join the white and to become intricately involved in it, because they're invited to research each of the conspiracy theory untruths. What it does is to make them feel as if, you know, they're part of an army that is advancing towards an eventual triumph, whereas their lives are going in the opposite direction for that. So, of course, it's, you know, who wouldn't prefer that fantasy to the, you know, very depressing reality?
Sure, sure. I'm curious, what was your initial writing journey that led you to writing and getting your first novel published?
Well, my writing goes well. I've only written two novels, and those have both been in the last 4 years. Before that, I wrote like 7 nonfiction books. So are you asking me about the beginning of my writing books generally or novels?
Well, I guess your novels. Okay. You know, you've had this nonfiction career with 7 nonfiction books, and I know that you have taught English. What led you to writing your two novels?
I stopped teaching full time. I'd spent a lot of my life trying to help students understand the nature of narrative, how novels are constructed, what makes, you know, what works and what doesn't. And finally, you know, here I was free, you know, I could do whatever I wanted. There was no more pressure to publish or perish. To tell you the truth, I just found myself starting to write that first novel, Money Matters. And in order to do that, I came up with a character who was as unlike me as she possibly could be. I mean, you know, I'm a man, she's a woman. I'm old, she's young. I still have English expressions and speak with an English accent, and she's wholly American. My life has been relatively stable. She is surviving on part-time jobs and living in her sister's apartment, and generally hasn't got her life fully together. But what I found was that I was able to discover her voice, if you like, to put it as simply as that. So that once I'd done that, whatever situation I put her in, I sort of instinctually was able to write out her dialogue, write out her actions. And the book wrote itself very readily. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed writing the book because, it sort of flowed out.
I'm curious, are you working on a third novel now?
You're touching on a sore point. I was working on the idea of a third novel, and the idea was based on the fact that maybe the biggest issue facing, civilization today is the growing inequality between the rich and the poor, which could well, create the breakdown of civilization as we know it, if it goes on this rate. And so I came up with the scenario of a hedge fund manager whose life is invaded by a homeless woman. And I was going to, bring the two totally different understandings of life into conflict and eventually into some kind of rapprochement, maybe into a romantic, conclusion. But the idea was proved more interesting than the actual realization. The characters wouldn't come to life. They remained examples of, a theory rather than individuals. So just recently, about a week ago, I gave that up, and I'm waiting. Because I'm not in a hurry, I'm not dependent upon, God forbid, royalties for my survival. So I can afford to give it time and wait until the appropriate idea bubbles up, and then I will be writing a third novel.
That's great. Well, I know that you've taught English for many years at the college level. Have you also taught creative writing?
I've never taught creative writing. Interestingly, no.
Interesting. Yeah. What were some of the courses that you usually taught?
My specialty area is 21st century fiction, and in particular English fiction. One of the most recent books I wrote. Well, the two most recent books I wrote were, one was called English Fiction Since 1984, and the other was a full-length study of Martin Amis, who was one of the most innovative English novelists of the 90s and influenced other people around him. But for a long time, I was freelancing, and so I would have to take what I could get. And so I found myself teaching anything from Chaucer and Shakespeare to world literature or the arts. I had one horrific course where I had to teach all the arts, including, jazz and film, from the Renaissance to present day in 15 weeks. And wow. I think I enjoyed it a lot more than my students.
So I'm curious, you mentioned Martin Amis. What have you been reading lately in the last year or two that you really enjoyed that you would mention novels?
The novel I most enjoy is Where the Crawdads Sing. Have you come across it at all?
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
It rightly stayed on the New York Times bestseller list for weeks and weeks and weeks. It's set in the marsh area of North Carolina off the coast there, and it evokes the landscape so vividly that the landscape becomes a major character really in the novel, because the young major character is actually left to her own devices to grow up in that landscape without any parents, and so she learns from the natural life around her. Wonderfully described and evoked. Great novel.
That's
and it's
great.
The first one. She's a I forget. She's some kind of scientist who's written, novels within a discipline. Not novels, books within a discipline, but never fiction until this.
So I'm curious, what was your writing process for your two novels? Did you do any outline or plotting, or did you just dive into the narrative?
It was a mixture. I mean, I think with the first one, I did start off diving straight in, and then I realized that I needed to have some kind of structure. And so I did a very rough structure for it, particularly as it's just like an amateur detective novel. And then I felt absolutely free to depart from that structure whenever, you know, a character's needs said, no, they can't do that. It wouldn't, you know, it's not probable. And I would then rewrite the rest of the outline. So when, you know, it alternated between the two.
Sure.
But I mean, obviously the actual fictional world and its demands overrode any considerations that I might have pre-planned in the outline. So the outline was constantly under revision. In the novel, Dangerous Conjectures, I did do more of an outline because I structured it daily from about the middle of January until the middle of March of 2020. And each day I alternated between the first person voice of Julian, the first person voice of Adam. And when I sent the draft off to my professional editor, she said, it reads like a diary. And so I then completely reset, and it was in the present tense as well. So I then completely reset it without doing a lot of rewriting, but a lot of grammatical change, by putting all the verbs into the past tense and putting the I's into he and she. And that interestingly still meant that the focalization, you know, the point of view alternated between the two of them, but nevertheless it came through the impersonal narrator's voice.
Interesting.
Well, yeah.
Well, given your experience with writing your two novels, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories and novels?
Well, first of all, whenever there is any kind of conflict between your own convictions, your own ideas, your own responses to life, and those of the characters in your fictional world, forget yours, because otherwise it won't ring true. The whole thing will, you know, sound more like a sermon or a lecture or something. Secondly, always, if in doubt, always erase. Never be afraid to rewrite, because very often that's the solution to any kind of impasse you find yourself in. Sometimes you've only got to eliminate, you know, a paragraph or something, and the whole thing is open again for you. So don't be afraid to make changes, and also listen, after you've done your first draft, listen to everybody. Don't necessarily, you know, assume that they're right, but listen to them and be prepared to rewrite extensively. The first draft is never the same as the final version of the book. And then finally, if you're self-publishing, get yourself some kind of assistance, just as you did with the editing. Get yourself some kind of professional assistance with publicizing it, or the book will disappear into a morass of other books on Amazon within the day.
That's true. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your two novels?
Well, the two novels are both available on Amazon, in both as an audiobook, as an ebook, and as a paperback. And I also, they will become available also on other outlets. And I also have a very extensive website with links to, you know, describing the books and with links to where they can be bought, on bhfinney@bhfinney.com.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Brian Finney, author of the new novel, Dangerous Conjectures. The book is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Brian, thanks for doing this interview.
No, thank you for having me.
Great.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.